Hi, my name is Ajay Sharma and I welcome you all to the second season, episode number one of Biting with Ravichi podcast, where I talk to many of my friends, faculties and administrators, members from my college, the Culinary Institute of America, where the food is life. On pilot episode, I have a very special person who is a very strong woman by character. She has a fire personality. And the topic we're going to talk about, it's all about Pride Month, sexuality, and what it's to be like a female chef in the culinary industry, which is male oriented. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Elish Maria Padra. Hi, Elish.
Hey, Ajay. Thank you for inviting me to your podcast. I feel very honored to be here and talk with you and all of your followers.
Thank you. So, firstly, hola.
Hola, ¿cómo estás?
Bien. ¿Está bien?
Todo bien.
Okay, so that's the Spanish I know. That's what Spanish I've been learning so far. Okay, so Elish, as I was researching about you, that you are a bakery and pastry arts student, a graduate, and now you are doing your bachelor's in culinary science.
Yeah.
So, tell us about your love for bakery and how did you get into this?
So, when I started in my food industry career, I actually started as a hotline cook. I wasn't exactly a baker. So all of my experience prior to coming to campus is on like the hotline and, you know, everything that isn't baking. So when I came here to school, there actually was a mistake with my entry application and they put me in baking classes. Okay. And I wasn't bothered, you know, so I was like, I already have a little minimal experience in what the hotline is. Why not learn about baking? And because I really genuinely did not know a lot. And I don't know, there, right there, I got like an interest in learning something that I didn't know. And you know, the school is so expensive already. Why not learn something that wasn't there? So that's when my baking career started, really.
Okay. So how did this shift from baking and pastry to culinary science happen?
So baking is all about science, to be honest. I've noticed that in the culinary arts classes, you don't discuss as much science as in the baking classes. So I just thought that I should extend it a little more. And also nowadays, having only an associate is so restraining in your career. Opportunities are less. And I don't know, you get better opportunities with having a bachelor's. And I just felt like the cold side degree here was the perfect option for me. Right now, I'm taking classes about hydrocolloids and, you know, all these ingredients that I hadn't learned before and how to apply them for modern solutions in the industry. And I've enjoyed these classes a lot, so.
Okay. So what's the one best thing you have learned from your classes?
I think the best thing, you know, now we're working with frying cubes of hollandaise. Mm-hmm. Hydrocolloids are so amazing. You can do anything with them. You can apply them to any application you want. It's like amazing. I don't even know how to start about the topic because it's so like intense. Chemically, and I think that's the best thing I've been learning so far, how to use hydrocolloids to, I don't know, thickening and suspending. We think about in the dessert area, like stuff like flans or like, I don't know, crème anglaise, stuff like that, but it's so much more. You can use thickening for so much more. And I think that's the best or most interesting I've been working on throughout.
Well, it's a learning from me. I'm going to take out from this episode today. So, being in a culinary school and such a prestigious school like CIA, it clearly shows your love for food. And I'm sure you must have some of your childhood food love stories, right? So tell us about your childhood, because I know you are from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And being from the island country is so much fun, and you know, I heard that Puerto Ricans are actually like the party animals.
Oh, yes, we are.
And they have intense love for food.
Yeah.
So tell us about your childhood. How did the love for food happen? And tell us about your culture.
Of course. So I'm from Puerto Rico, as you explained. It's an island. It's a very, very small island. So we have a lot of coast, obviously. But personally, I grew up in the area of Puerto Rico, Macao. It's a beautiful mountain called Pitaya. That's where I grew up in. And honestly, my best food memories that really made me want to follow this line of work was just helping my grandfathers and my grandmother like slaughter the chickens and the pork to prepare like a meal for the family. I remember my grandmother had this chicken heart and liver rice. That is the best dish I've like had. Like, it's amazing, like all the flavor. And I remember how she used to teach me, you know, like you have to do this first. When you open the chicken, this is all the parts of the chicken. This is what you get, this is what you throw away. You know, just learning about food. And then also just we have a tradition of roasting pork on a stick on the, it's called the alabarita, and we do it in like a Chinese box. And so when we start a party, you know, my grandfather would put the pork in slow heat, and it would just cook all day in the party. And then we would eat at the end of the party after like 10 hours of the pork cooking. Yeah, it's like a party in the whole day. And like the main reason of gathering is the pork. And just seeing that is just like very special, and like how food brings everyone together. Also, I really started cooking around when I was like 7 years old, because my parents worked long hours and I had siblings to feed, as I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest of five, actually. So it was like it was really a hard thing to do. But you know what? What started as a chore, like started becoming a passion. Mm-hmm. As a 7 year old starting to cook, I saw it as a difficult task. But then I started seeing how food could be like a creative medium instead of playing with something like plastiline. I don't know if you guys played with that also. No?
I have no idea.
Oh, so it's like a mass, and you just form it into whatever you like. And
oh, it's like a clay.
Yeah. Just like clay that you play with. Play-Doh, right. I don't know. I just started seeing food that way. I could turn food. And I was doing really horrible things with food, you know what I mean? At like 8, 9 years old, that was like a really tragic time in my family, me cooking. But slowly, I just learned how to control certain things, you know, how heat affected food, how seasoning affected food. And slowly, I just started having a love for food since childhood. And you could ask my aunt. When I was little, all I would say is I want to be a chef when I would grow up. I want to be a chef. So really, it was always my passion and what I really wanted. And even though I didn't start on that line, today I am here and I'm very proud of myself for having changed and chosen what my passion was.
Well, okay. Coming to your childhood, do you remember what was the first dish you cooked as a kid?
Oh my lord. So there's this beef cut. It's called beef steak. Actually, it's just beef steak, but you know, Spanish, broken, you know, they just call it beef steak. So I remember it's a really thin cut of meat. It's made with onions, vinegar, oil, a little sugar, with rice. And so I remember I put it on the stove. And I kind of didn't have any, I couldn't difference the heat in the stove. So I just completely burned all of this beef stick. But like, it was like charcoal, like burned. And it was only like 15 minutes. And I had just put everything on high because I really didn't like know that I had to put things on a like lower thing or whatever. So it was really scary for my siblings to see the kitchen smoking and whatever. But it was really funny. And it was actually in my grandmother's house. So she was upset, obviously, because I had burnt all the food. But yeah, that was really funny. So coming from that to what I am now today is a long, long way.
Okay. So you mentioned about that you were the eldest in your siblings. Mm-hmm. So were you the pampered one or were you the responsible one?
Oh my lord. I was definitely the responsible one. And you know, I really had to take that role. And in my culture, it's normal. I know in yours too, for the elder to be the most responsible and take care of everyone, including the parents.
It's pressurizing at times.
Very, very. And, you know, for example, I had my own schoolwork to do. And then when my siblings came from home, I also had to help them with their schoolwork. And then I was expected to have food for my parents when they came home at night. You know, it was a lot. And definitely I could say that my siblings are the ones that are pampered 100%.
So basically you are like that idol child whom the family looks up to.
Exactly. And it's harsh because the family has a lot of expectations, you know, for you as the elder.
I mean, you are the oldest.
Yeah.
Okay, so it clearly showed how much you love food and how much you love cooking. So tell us how CIE happened to you. I mean, you are in one of the best culinary colleges in the world. I mean, say it's the Oxford for chefs.
Yes, yeah.
So how did that happen?
Well, I'm just going to start by saying that in my first day here at the CIA, it was a BIET class, Baking, Ingredient, Equipment, Technology. And the first day that I was sitting there, I just started crying in the class because I just felt very emotional. Because it had been such a journey for me to even get here. I mean, I come from such a small island that this was such an impossible task, it seemed. And, you know, everything started when I was in high school. I was in a science specialized school. I had scholarships there to study and all that. And I had seen that the CIA had this program. But obviously, someone like me from a small island, not a lot of money, New York, like what the hell? I would never think that I would come here. And so I started school in Puerto Rico in a biotechnology major. I worked really hard on that. I couldn't finish because of the Hurricane Maria when it passed. It kind of destroyed the island and, you know, including the college. So it was really hard. I just had to relocate. And when I relocated, I started working at hotels. I spent a little time in California, then I worked for a year in the Dominican. And while being there, I went to Colombia and Panama to see the industry there too. So I just kind of, it was the path that I took to make myself happy after the hurricane and all that. And once I saw myself really loving what I was doing and wanting to make a professional career out of it, I decided to ask my chefs for support and mentorship and to like coming here. I emailed chefs here that were in the program. It was a very slow process for me, definitely. So because I came here when I was already 21. Okay. So, you know, it definitely from being 16 and wanting to come here and then finally being here at 21, it was like huge for me. So yeah, my career just slowly guided me here, and my mentors studied here as well. So it was just natural of me to try to apply here and come and work. And I am very grateful for all the people who helped me financially to even start here the first few semesters. And it definitely has been a journey, and I never thought that I would be here. So it definitely has been beautiful to be here and even meet people like you, you know. Who would have said that a Puerto Rican girl from a small island from the mountains would be talking to an Indian guy, you know what I mean? In New York, like, ridiculous.
I mean, that's the beauty, right?
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
You believe in diversity.
100%.
Okay, so that's how you landed up in CIA, that you have the experience and how your mentors helped you out.
Mm-hmm.
So how bakery happened and how has your journey been as a baker so far in CIA?
Okay, So I'm going to start by saying that it definitely was a little bit of a challenge to start in baking. Because all I kind of knew was how to make pre-mixed cookies or a cake or and just put some heavy cream, like whipped cream on top, and that's it, you know, call it a day. So to come here and have the expectations of, you know, greatness, it's challenging. But I kind of quickly started catching on to everyone and doing, I feel like when you're in the kitchen, even if you don't know how to do what they're doing, if you're a hard worker, chefs will see that and they will latch on to you and teach you everything they know. And that's kind of like what I felt going through the classes as a baker, as a new baker, to be honest. And it was a lot of information as well because of all the chemistry. You know, as a cook, I didn't really think about measurements or like how it mattered. To me, it was just all creativeness and flow of whatever it is that flows when you're cooking. And, you know, the passion was already there. I just needed to hone my skills in like baking and pastry. And now, having finished the program and being a pretty proficient baker, I feel very proud of myself because I definitely feel everyone should try to do both and see what they like most, because now I couldn't tell you sitting right here in front of you what I would love more, either like cooking hot or just baking and pastries and such. I honestly think there shouldn't be that much of a difference when it comes to these careers, but you know, there is that division. But yeah, I love both.
Are you a proud baker now?
Oh, I definitely am. I passed with a high grade. I didn't burn a lot of stuff. I burned myself more. So that's all that matters. Yeah.
Okay, so my proud baker, tell me one dish that you are really proud of. One product which, according to you, mm-hmm. can not be done by anyone else other than you.
Execute. Let's see. Okay. So for my plated desserts class, my project, I did this standing cube. So it was a whole thing for me. It was so complicated to make, but I basically did black sesame mousse with a mango insert on a cube mold. And then I took out that cube. I cut one of the corners very little so that you could see the cube kind of like standing in one little corner, and it would look like it was like kind of like levitating on the plate almost because it was so little, like the incision you couldn't even see. And then I would dip that in like chocolate and spray it to make it look black, to just kind of represent the black sesame. And that was even the pastry chef in Bocuse, Chef Weber, was helping me with the process. Chef Nastor loved the project. And even though I thought I would fail 100%, I really did keep going, and the finalized product was beautiful, and it really did look like a standing cube. And I was really proud of myself for doing that. And honestly, I haven't seen that in like social media or such. So I'm really proud of that dish. Yes.
You know, people who are listening to you right now about your dish will copy the dish. So are you going to challenge them for this?
You know what? No, I definitely believe that I have no ownership over food in this industry. Mm-hmm. I really dislike when chefs do not share their knowledge or recipes, because I definitely feel like culture nobody owns, and I feel like it should be passed on. These recipes should be passed on. These ideas should be passed on, because people just need, as a society, we should be better and better and better. And as culinarians, we should be better and better and better. So if this idea makes someone think of something even better, then so be it. I would be very proud of myself for even inspiring someone to do something like that, you know?
So by this statement, you have put a period on the statement called, if you have a recipe, never do it for free.
Yeah.
Okay, so talking to you, I found that you have a very attracting personality. You have like a leadership personality. And I know that you are the group leader of your class. You have been a group leader.
Yes.
And you are the president of a CIA run club called Saga.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So what does that club Saga stands for? Tell us about
So Saga, as you said, is the Pride Club on campus. We do not only stand for Pride and the LGBTQIA community, we also stand for equality in school. So Saga stands for Sexual Awareness and Gender Alliance. We are basically an inclusive community that is all about embracing diversity, advocating for equality for both sexes, both genders, and just educating about healthy sexual lifestyles and how to be an advocate and an ally in this world. You know, I strongly believe that in order to support others, you do not have to be part of their community. And so we teach a lot of students that you don't need to be gay or trans or anything to be supportive of this community. So that's what we stand for, basically.
Okay. Firstly, thank you for explaining about the Saga Club and Happy Pride Month. It's
yes,
July.
Happy Pride Month, everyone.
No, it's June. It's June, not
yes,
July. It's
yes.
June. Happy Pride Month once again.
Yeah.
Okay, so talking about the LGBTQ community, I come from a country where considering same-sex marriage or you know, carrying out a same-sex relationship is still considered as a taboo.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it's a legal law, but mm-hmm. still, you know, the old world, old school mentality that no, it cannot be done.
Yes.
So I have some interesting questions for you. According to you, what is the difference between gender and sex?
So I'm just going to start by saying, also in my islands, it's very, I feel like in a lot of places, it's such a hard topic to speak about. And I grew up in a culture where they always told me that people who did these things would go to hell, or it was just like a curse on people, or a sickness even. And at a certain point, I, as many other people, I even believed on it, you know, and I definitely thought that that was wrong and whatever. But once you go out in the world and you burst your bubble, you see that these are people that are just trying to be happy and just trying to be supportive of themselves and find identity. And I feel like people should let them be. And so just to answer your question about gender and sex, so gender refers to basically social constructed roles that society and different cultures have decided and kept. And sex is kind of like the biological attributes that make you identify as a male, female, or even intersex. So someone can identify with a gender different from their sex. That's the difference.
Okay. So, according to you, do you think the transgenders are gay?
So this is a topic that I hear about a lot, because a lot of people are confused about like what it means to be trans or what it means to be gay. So I'm just gonna like kind of like define both. So transgender people are people that don't identify with the sex that was given at birth. And someone that is homosexual means that you're attracted to the same gender. So in a way, these terms do not relate. Mm-hmm. If it makes sense, because of a trans person that identifies as a woman but was born male, is attracted to men, they're not gay because they identify as a woman. So it's a hetero relationship. And vice versa, if a male, if a trans person identifies as male but was born female and they're attracted to males, then they're gay.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what causes people to be a gay or a lesbian or a bi, according to you?
Mm-hmm. So for me, there really is no cause, to be honest. I have a sibling who is bi, and like they just were born that way. And I kind of noticed even at childhood that they were attracted to both sexes. And all the innocence that they had, it was like, well, this they haven't learned about what being bi is. But they're like that. So for me, there is no cause. It's a person's identity and they're born with it. And I feel like people shouldn't look for further explanation and should stop to trying to find a cause for these sexual orientations. Because for me, it's like really natural.
So basically it's normal according to you.
Yeah, I definitely believe that people are born with that liking. and it shouldn't be such a horrible thing or such a taboo.
So do you think people who cross-dress are also transgender?
So cross-dressing is when people like to dress as a different gender. So a man wearing a skirt, makeup, and all that. And so skirts, makeup are kind of like belong to women according to society. So if a man uses those, that means that they're cross-dressing. However, that doesn't mean that that man identifies as a woman necessarily. And I really feel like these items should not be identified by a gender itself. If a man wants to go out wearing a skirt, why not? You know, what should be stopping them from cross-dressing? And that should not make other people feel like, oh, they're definitely like trans or they're gay, or, you know, it doesn't correlate at all. It's just a man wanting to wear heels or something. It's nothing that should be seen as that or connected as that.
Okay, so if you had to advocate yourself about this topic of being lesbian, gay, being a transgender, how would you advocate if someone has to have an argument with you that, you know, you don't believe in something called as gay or lesbian? Because as you said that, you know, it's considered taboo in your country, and same with me. So how would you explain that in a very simplified language, and how would you convince that it is pretty normal?
For me, sexual orientation is just the same as sex or gender. You are born with it, and you really can't change that. And there's a point, honestly, AJ, where people cannot be convinced. And something that has been put as a seed in someone's brain and has been
there forever.
Yeah. Some people really don't want to change opinions. And there are some people like I obviously changed my opinion about it and how I viewed it 100%. But if you don't want to learn, there's no point in arguing with someone that doesn't want to learn or expand their vision of the world. And I feel like a lot of cultures that have made this a taboo really close the doors for people. And because honestly, this community is full of such happy, bursting, beautiful, like creative people that I just don't understand why so many people close their doors on them just because of who they want to love. And in simplified terms, even a 5-year-old could understand that those things are natural and that nobody should be judged for it. Yeah.
Okay, so what do you think about the LGBTQ community on our campus at CIA?
I think that it's one of the biggest communities. Even if people are silent about their identity, because obviously this is something very personal, I want to throw that out there. You do not need to tell everyone what you identify as. It's a very personal thing. I personally am pansexual. However, like, people here don't know that because it's my preference. It's my personal thing. And nobody has to shout that to the 70s, you know? If you want, perfect. If you don't, perfect as well. So really, my club has helped me meet so many beautiful people on this campus that are part of the community. And honestly, most of those are the most creative ones you see in the kitchens, are the people that you see most involved on campus. You know, I really do think that the people that are a part of this community are one of the best people on this campus and one of the most influential people or the influential communities on this campus, and most supportive as well, to be honest.
I mean, that's beautiful that, you know, your club is doing such a great job bringing such community to the fame and the respect they should deserve. Because, you know, the place where I come from a very conservative family, we're talking about such a topic is not considered a very good thing. But as I moved from India to America, I had a whole lot of cultural shift.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many people in my class who belonged to such a community, and I'm totally okay with it. I mean, they were foreigners, who guys, they're beautiful people,
mm-hmm.
and they just talk to us normally.
Exactly.
And you know, that's when the whole thing changed for me,
mm-hmm.
the way I look the world, that how beautiful the world can be. I mean, people talk about, the color.
Mm-hmm.
But according to me, black is beautiful.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. And you should not judge someone on the basis of their gender. At the end of the day, it's mm-hmm. human. And the biggest religion is humanity, mm-hmm. which has no barriers and which has no discrimination.
Exactly.
So I think I appreciate what Saga is doing as a club, and I'm really proud that I am taking your interview
thank you.
The president, as the friend, and I'm getting to learn a lot about the community.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm really proud of it. So you're a female, and mm-hmm. you're in a male dominant industry.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to overpower such thing and coming out like the bamboo from the earth? Have you seen the bamboo, how it
yes.
goes
yeah, yeah.
deep underneath? So how do you think that a woman can change the culinary and the bakery industry?
By being the best. By aiming to be the best. I really feel like as women in this industry, we have a responsibility of really, really working on our skills and showing that women have as much skill to be in this industry as men. And in various situations and various sites that I have worked on, I've had situations where I'm not respected or I'm not seen as equal. But from the moment that they see me working and the moment they see me producing, and making my stuff, it's like, oh, okay, she's worth the respect, or she's worth, the equality in this kitchen. And I feel like women are very nervous to go into this industry and show what they have because of that. But we should really focus on really trying to be the best and presenting ourselves as equal as men. And I really think women should not have any limiting things. And I see a lot of women like with the victim mentality of like, oh my God, I'm a woman in this kitchen. Like, oh my God, these things happen to me. Or, oh my God. And don't get me wrong, things do happen. But I really, really, really feel, and I'm an advocate for really putting all the confidence in yourself and making things happen for yourself. Don't let anyone tell you that you can't do it or that you're not strong enough. And I remember when I started in this industry, I couldn't lift 100 pounds of flour, or I couldn't lift a hog out of a, it's difficult as being like physically weaker. And I started exercising, I started trying to be stronger, and I achieved it. I did not need help for anyone. And really, I feel, again, like I said, as women, we should work to be seen as equals. And I think that's a responsibility that the person has with themselves, to be seen as equals and be respected in the kitchen.
I think that's beautiful what you said, that you don't have to be dependent on anyone for anything in mm-hmm. the kitchen. And I'm really proud of that. I mean, you have been influencing me ever since we started the
thank you.
And I know I've been saying this again and again, but I'm really honored to have you on my show.
No, I am honored, AJ.
We both equally honored. So, talking about the influence, who are the three people who influenced you the most, apart from your parents?
Of course. Okay, so definitely the first person I have is my grandmother. Her name is Wanda Alvarado, and she is the strongest woman. She really is. She, as a 17-year-old with two, I no wait, I think she was 19 years old when she had two children. She was a single mother, and with no college education, just taking care of her children. But before she was 30, she built an empire in Puerto Rico, a company that was worth millions. This woman, who was a single mother with two children and had no college education, managed to create such a big company, and she even had engineers and lawyers working for her. And the fact that she even got to that success, that speaks tons to me. Because when you want to make you make it work. And that's what she taught me. That's something that she's always said to me. Don't look at yourself as less just because you have less. And I really think that that's how I see myself here. You know, I see people that have a lot of resources, or, you know, I even have friends that can go to Spain for the weekend and hang out. And, you know, I don't have those resources, or I don't have as much as people here. But you know what? I give as much as they give. And that's what she taught me. And then the second person that has been very influential on me is Carlos Portela. He's a chef in Puerto Rico. He's won the prizes of like best chef of the Caribbean, so he really is a strong chef. And what I've taken away from him is he always says hasta la última gota, which means till the last drop. And I really saw that live when we had survived the hurricane, and his business was like really struggling, obviously, because nobody was able to even, you know what, he wasn't even able to turn on the lights in the business, or like the roof was lost. Like, it was ridiculous. And when all of this was happening and his business was really struggling, with three children, by the way, he looked at me, he said, till the last drop, till the last drop. And every time I saw him being a victim of like theft, you know, people would come into the restaurant and steal his generator that he used to turn on the restaurant, like food. He always said, you know what, Elish, till the last drop, till the last drop. And I really think that he has influenced me to just keep going and really be perseverant on what I want and what I want to achieve. And every time I have hardships in my head, it's like, Elish, till the last drop. It's fine. You still have it. Keep going. And the third person is Nasha Fondir. She's a pastry chef who really did inspire me on seeing pastry chefs and bakers as something greater than what people portray. And she is also a single, she was a single mother of two when she started this career with no education. And nowadays she's the most prominent pastry chef in the Caribbean, as well as Carlos Portela. Like, she's the biggest pastry chef in Puerto Rico. And she taught me how to be, I wouldn't say intimidating, maybe I can't find a better word for it, but she taught me how to have a strong presence in the kitchen. Because before I was very shy, I was very small. She taught me how to grow and how to show that I have grown. When I feel like when I step in somewhere, people can really notice my personality or my energy, because that's what I want to manifest and portray. And she really has led me to be a very strong baker in the kitchen.
That's beautiful to hear from you. So this brings me to the next question. Since the grandmother, your grandmother, and chefs in Puerto Rico has inspired and influenced you, how do you want people to look up to you?
I definitely want to be someone that people feel like they can rely upon. As people have inspired me, I really do want to inspire others, especially women. I want to be that person that people look at and they say, if she did it, I can do it too. And I really want to be portrayed as that, and as a strong, perseverant, hardworking person. That's what I want for myself.
So basically, you want to go with the line of Barack Obama's speech, yes we can.
Yes, we can.
Okay, so being in this restaurant, culinary, bakery industry, there are some myths, you know, people have that, you know, it's a very lavish industry, it's a very glamorous industry.
Yes.
You cook good food, good looking food, but it's not good.
Yeah.
You know, I know, because we are Calgarians and the bakers. But the people who don't know the common myths about the industry, what would be that you want to debunk?
I think you were right on the line with kind of like what I want to say with for this. And I've encountered this myself. People really do think that this career is for low-life people, for people with no skills, or people that don't want more education, or like the easy path. And brother, do I have to tell you, they're so wrong. And even when I made the career change from biotechnology to cooking, my family, that was the most horrible thing I could have done to them. I remember my grandparents even were like, you know, we're so disappointed and probably you will be a nobody. Because that's how it's seen in Puerto Rico, you know, it's people that cook are the people that can't do anything else. So let's put it like that. And I know that in India, it's almost the same. I really do believe that people should stop looking at it that way, because what we do in our homes or the skills that we need to produce food at home is not the same as the type of skills you need to hone to be in a professional kitchen. The pressure, the emotional stability you need to have in a kitchen, the physical strength, the mental strength to even finish a 14, 16 hour shift is incredible. And the fact that you even see people with so many skills that they can even chop a whole vegetable in 2 seconds or make beautiful dishes out of something that doesn't look so beautiful at first. It's just skills that people don't realize that are hard to get. And they're only, people can come in here to this prestigious culinary school and they could never learn the skills that a person that has been cooking in a kitchen for 30 years has. And it's all about technique, skill, and discipline. And that's not something that a lot of professions have. So
basically, no one can be Christina Tosti or Gordon Ramsay just by looking at them on the
YouTube. Exactly.
Okay, so we have been through so many questions and I hope you enjoyed so far session. But if you could step into my shoes, what would you have asked yourself that I did not ask you today?
I think I would have asked myself if I was happy and satisfied with what I'm doing and where I am. And I don't know the position where I am right now. And I say this because in this career, in this industry, I feel like we go so fast. We go so fast, so quick, that we don't stop to think how these decisions that we're making or these productions that we're doing make us feel. I feel like emotions and feelings are left behind in this industry. And I feel like cooks should ask themselves more, are you happy? Are you satisfied? Is this what you love? And I don't know, I found myself in a lot of situations where I go too fast, too quick with my career. And I never realized, wait, does this even, where I am at? Does it make me happy? Does it make me satisfied with what I'm doing? And I feel like we should stop and think about ourselves more, you know, than usual.
So are you scared or are you satisfied?
I am very happy and I am very satisfied. Maybe if you asked me 2 years ago, I wouldn't have been. But the position I am in now, it's, I think all the hard work I've been doing has finally produced and has finally put me in a spot where I'm really happy and satisfied with myself. And I think that's really hard to say sometimes because, you know, I had this chef that always told me, if you're satisfied, then your goals are not high enough. And to that, I say, that is completely wrong and completely toxic behavior, thinking, like, no. And I realized, I was like, no, you know what? I can be happy and I can be satisfied with where I'm at. I understand that we should be ambitious, but that doesn't mean that we shouldn't ever have happiness or satisfaction. So yeah, I really believe that is not true. It's okay to be happy and satisfied.
But after being so passionate and determined about being in this industry, did you ever feel like
You know what? When I still was a child in the industry, I'm not gonna lie, definitely there were moments of breaking. When I started working in the Dominican, I was working in Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, 2,000 rooms. So always there were around 5,000 guests plus. It was a monster. And, you know, there would be days where I was working 16-hour shifts, 6 days a week. Like, it was very harsh for me. And starting there and experiencing sexual harassment and, you know, these people looking at me as less than them, it definitely makes anyone break. It's like really hard to be in that environment 24/7 and try to be happy with it. So I'm not gonna lie, definitely there were moments where I was like, damn, is this really worth it? You know, is this chefs burning me or like screaming at me or throwing food at me? Is it really worth it to be here? And that's why I said, if you had asked me a few years ago, maybe I wouldn't have been satisfied. But all that work, all the challenges, all the barriers I had to surpass, you know what, it was worth it. And I definitely think I have grown from that. And you know what, once you reach your low point, like people say, oh, the only way you can go is up. And that's the only way I've gone since that point. So I'm really satisfied.
I would like to add something to it. Always remember, they came to bury us, but they forgot we were sleeping. We'll go from the
exactly,
and they'll bloom like a flower, and we'll just rip everything apart, and we'll just grow up. Okay, enough of the serious talk, enough of the, you know, intense discussion. Now let's have a quick rapid fire round with you.
Oh my god.
Okay, it's gonna be a fun segment with you. And you'll just have to say quickly, in a blink of a second. Yeah, quickly.
Okay.
Champagne or martini?
Champagne, definitely.
Pig in a blanket or bruschetta?
Bruschetta, always.
Okay. Bradley Cooper or Peter Parker?
Oh my lord, Bradley Cooper.
Okay, could you introduce to us in what? One word?
What?
In one word, could you introduce to us?
I don't know how to answer. I don't know. Happy, I don't know.
Okay, food on a skewer or food in a tiny spoon?
Skewer.
Skewer? Okay, Indian food or Puerto Rican food?
How could you? How can you? This is such a complicated. I don't know. Hey, Puerto Rican food, I had.
Okay. Someone is going to get jealous.
Yes.
Okay. Garlic pizza or red sauce?
Garlic pizza.
Okay. Black truffle or white?
White truffle.
What about summer?
Summer. Wait, what?
What about the summer? Do you like summer?
Oh, yes, I do.
Okay. Chocolate pudding or vanilla creme brulee?
Vanilla creme brulee. I don't like chocolate.
Okay. Buffet or sit-down dinners?
Sit-down dinners.
Coffee or a red wine spill on your Oscar outfit?
Coffee. Oh my god.
Edible gold or wearable gold?
Wearable gold? What are you talking about?
Okay. Worst food to eat?
Green beans.
Kale or poppy seeds?
Oh. poppy seeds?
Okay. Nutella or peanut butter?
Peanut butter.
Okay. Mint chocolates or chocolate raspberry?
I don't like chocolate, Ajay. So, chocolate raspberry.
Okay. Avocado toast or cold pressed juice?
Avocado toast.
Butter or olive oil?
Butter. Yes.
Chicken breast or chicken thighs?
Thighs.
Okay. Baked or fried?
Fried. Always.
Okay. Brussels sprouts or cauliflower?
Cauliflower.
Okay. Waffles or pancake?
Waffles.
Lobster or steak?
Lobster.
And lastly, cake or pie?
Pie.
Okay.
That was quite an interesting round.
I mean, I hope you enjoyed that.
I swear a little, I'm not gonna lie.
Okay, so here we are at the end of the podcast. And before we wrap up, I would like to thank you so much
of
for
course.
Being such a wonderful, beautiful guest on my podcast. And I'm hoping that you do well into your career and life. And before we wrap up, we'll just the last question. So, where can the listeners connect with you if they want to go into the culinary science background or to the baking and pastry?
So, for professional or educational purposes, people can find me on LinkedIn. My name is there, Alish Padro, Alych P PADRO. So you can find me. I will definitely connect with you. No problem. You can send me in a message there. If it's for friendly purposes or even almost also professional or educational purposes, my Instagram is, my handle is Alish Marie. So AlyshMari. So there you can find me on Instagram and follow me. I'll follow back.
And the last question for the podcast, tips for the upcoming generations.
Work before you come to school. Experiment in the industry before you come here and spend so much money on something you don't even know if you can be happy in. It's not the same to cook in your kitchen with all the time and patience of the world with nobody on your back watching what you do versus being in this professional kitchen with a chef having high expectations of you and a consumer that has expectations. Consumers don't care who the hell you are. They just want good food in a timely manner. You know, so you cooking at home, your family cares who you are and what you make. Consumers do not. So it's definitely, it's not the same. So before you decide coming here and spending so much, go out and work for a year or something. And I found that for myself, it's been very beneficial to know the ways of the kitchen before coming here. So that would be the one tip I would give people.
So basically, anyone can cook, but only the fearless can do the great.
Exactly. Not everyone can handle a 14-16-hour shift, let me tell you.
Exactly. I agree with you. It's mentally and physically draining.
Yes.
So here we are at the end of the podcast. I am so thankful to you, Alish, that you have been such a support to be on my podcast today. And I wish you all the best. You, your career, and your club, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
I look forward to see more and more activities coming out from the Sarah Club, and I'm looking to hear a lot from you. Okay, so thank you guys. That was it from today's episode with Alish Maria Padro, and I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful listening segment. Thank you.